Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all chips to PC. It is Saturday, the 20th day of June, Anno Domini 2026, and you... Ha-ha! You lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 10 minutes after the hour, for your edification and delectation, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things that you're not going to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues?
I always come after Dave, so I was waiting for Dave.
You're right. And Dave Enright, one step ahead of law somewhere in the Southwest. Michael Oden, generously... has come in to take his place at the board. And as you know, this is a brand new phone system, so be polite to Michael.
I have never used it before, so this is going to be my first time.
And so
bad things might happen. Like your call might get dropped. Who knows?
But if it does, please just call back and understand that we are human and therefore fallible. Particularly Michael. So... So, just as a reminder, before I read the news, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Every month, Microsoft delivers updates on Patch Tuesday. Starting on Wednesday, Microsoft starts announcing what failed, what caused problems, and what didn't work quite as planned. And then they start announcing fixes. This month's Patch Tuesday was the biggest ever, over 200 fixes. So, of course, there are a lot of problems and out-of-band solutions to those problems coming down the pike. Here are just some of them. We only have 2 hours, and we'd like to take some calls, so I won't be telling you what all of them are. Multiple users report that after installing June's patches, Windows 11 systems freeze completely within minutes of booting, some within as little as 5 minutes. One user noted that the system freezes too quickly to perform a standard uninstall through settings, forcing recovery via the Windows recovery environment, or WinRE. Of course, recovery mode itself also caused additional breakage in at least one case, reportedly altering the Windows Edition label and removing the taskbar clock, ultimately requiring a full OS install.
Ouch.
Among the most severe reported issues is the update forcing devices into BitLocker recovery mode on reboot, even on machines where BitLocker and device encryption have been explicitly disabled. Microsoft's own AI-assisted support tool confirmed that without, they say AI-assisted, it's not assisting anybody, it's doing all the work itself, confirmed that without a saved BitLocker recovery key, the only resolution is a full OS wipe and reinstall, effectively rendering devices inoperable and causing direct business downtime. Hope you've got A, exceptionally good backups, and B, a copy of your BitLocker recovery key. The update also breaks OneDrive folder browsing from within Windows File Explorer on domain-joined PCs. The OneDrive shortcut appears in the File Explorer sidebar but returns blank results when clicked. Some users report that the update breaks local area network access entirely while leaving internet connectivity intact. So you can get to the internet, you just can't get any of the other machines on your local network. Excellent.
Which is weird. Your local network is local.
Right. Attempts to block the update or pausing updates in settings has proven ineffective, with the update silently reinstalling itself overnight. Screw you. We're Microsoft. HP devices face blue or black screen of death errors linked to EFI partition, a system partition, the ESP space, constraints of 100 megabytes versus the recommended 500 megabytes, conflicting with secure boot certificate updates bundled into this patch. There's a registry hack that may possibly fix it, but don't hold your breath. Microsoft is also investigating a new issue, preventing third-party applications from launching Microsoft Office applications or opening documents on up-to-date Windows system. This known issue affects Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Access, and other Access is still around, and other Microsoft Office applications when using third-party apps that include things like CCH Engagement, Zotero, Workpaper Management, Manager, dental software like Dentrix and Softdent, and other similar applications. Oh, and just to pop the cherry onto this slice of pie, Microsoft has confirmed a confusing Windows bug that causes different file names to appear in the confirmation dialog when deleting a file from the recycle bin.
You want to delete file Y? No, I want to delete file X.
Yes, yes. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft's Microsoft's post-patch problems.
You're trying to get funny there, and it didn't work.
Didn't work. I tried to get alliterative, and it didn't happen. And your choices are, this is a lot. I'm not surprised. We Windows users are tough, and glad I'm not using Windows. So far, we've got 27 votes, and glad I'm not using Windows is about half of them. And, of course, you can vote on the poll. It's super easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And there it is. And then when you're done with that, why not give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. I have to admit, I felt a little bit of trepidation when I was actually attempting to update my Windows tablet. Today, as I may have mentioned in the past, I went on Amazon and bought a Fujitsu Stylus 2-in-1. It's a laptop where you can detach the monitor and it becomes a tablet. And it was $68. And it runs Windows 11. And I thought, okay, for $68, how wrong can I go?
That doesn't even cover the cost of the Windows license when you normally buy it yourself.
Exactly right. I thought, how bad can it be? Well, it's slow. It's only got 4 gig of RAM, and it's only got a 64 gig hard drive. But it runs, and it runs surprisingly, comparatively well. So I went to update it this week, and of course it took like an hour. But it updated, and it went fine, so I felt quite good. I've been waiting for it to screw up so that I can install Linux on it. But in the meantime, I'm seeing how long it takes. I don't run it. I mean, I don't do anything with it, so it, you know, probably lasts quite a long time, but I was a little trepidatious when I was doing that today. But we're hearing from people all over the place, and sadly, you know, I'm getting calls and emails and texts and IMs from people, and my only response is, "Yep, this is a known problem," and nope, Microsoft hasn't fixed it yet. I'm sorry.
People are afraid to update Windows, and then they get caught by some bug.
Right.
And stop. So you update Windows, and you're screwed by bugs. And if you don't update Windows, you're screwed by bugs.
Exactly right.
So don't use Windows.
Well, and of course, you know, we're just rolling along until October 14th. Right? October 14th is the end of the Windows 10 extended support update. Theoretically, unless Microsoft changes their mind again, theoretically, Windows 10 will end even extended support on October 14th. Now, that is after Patch Tuesday for October. So, assuming you get those patches and install them, you've got about a month before Patch Tuesday November when bad guys are going to see everything that got fixed. No, it wasn't fixed in Windows 10, and start hitting it like mad.
Yep. Which they pretty much all already do. You said earlier, you know, Patch Tuesday is quickly followed by Exploit Wednesday.
Right.
But now they're going to have a bigger surface to exploit because all the Windows 10 users that used to get updates don't anymore.
And Microsoft has essentially told them all the openings.
Yep.
So that's going to be a problem. But you know, we don't even need that. Microsoft is clearly completely capable of creating their own set of problems with their own updates. And we've said this before, a lot of that has to do with AI. Microsoft has gotten rid of their entire quality assurance team, the QA team, and are doing all that by AI, which means they also got rid of, they used to have hundreds and hundreds of systems that they would test Windows on to see that, you know, this particular set of drivers or hardware didn't have a problem. Mm-hmm. Now they simulate it in AI.
Yeah.
And as we all know, AI lies. Excuse me, hallucinates. And so, yeah, we're finding that a lot of junk, to put the radio-friendly term on it, is getting through to people's computers. And Microsoft isn't really that concerned because they still haven't reached a pain point yet.
Yeah. Pretty much everybody's computer, especially in Windows, is unique. The drivers you have, the fonts you have, the peripherals you have.
The programs you've got loaded.
Yep. And
the hardware you're running it on.
That's how advertisers track you around the internet, because every computer's unique. They know this is that same computer again.
Every computer has a unique fingerprint.
The pixel dimensions of your screen. So one pixel off, it's a different computer.
Yep. And I used to have a page up on my website that said, these are all the things we know about you just from your browser.
Mm-hmm.
People got scared. I took it down.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff that we know. And if you can, you know, I can always say, I don't know your name, right? I can't say this is Steve's computer, but I can say, oh, it's that Mac.
Yep.
And the person using that Mac often searches for model airplanes. So I'm going to show him model airplane ads.
Yeah. The EFF has a site called Cover My Tracks, or Cover Your Tracks,
yeah.
Where if you want to see how bad it is, you can have it test your browser and see all the information your browser is telling the other end. And it's an interesting catch-22, because the browser makers think, oh, that's a neat feature. Let's add in, we can tell the website what your pixel dimensions of your screen are,
right,
so it can better format the web page without realizing the ramifications. Is now an advertiser can track which screen you have.
Right. It's a real issue. And, if, you know, every cool thing that someone does for you also opens you up to a bad thing.
Yep.
And we see a lot of bad people on the internet.
The browser makers are all trying to hide tracking of some sort. Google, which ironically is one of the biggest advertisers,
right,
run the browser. They tried to implement a new safe advertising non-tracking thing where you got grouped into different cohorts.
Right.
Flock, what was it, the Federation of Cohorts or something like that, so that advertisers could get data that was anonymized and not tied to you.
Right.
Well, in the EU, the advertising lobby sued Google, saying, you can't do that, you're going to kill our business. And surprisingly, the European courts agreed.
Yeah, that's weird. But
typically, yes. Europe is more consumer-focused than they are business-focused, kind of the opposite of what we have here.
Right.
And so Google scrapped their whole plans about making your browser safer because the advertisers will lose money.
Right. It's a weird world that we live in. I won't say the only way, but certainly the most consistently working way to make money on the internet is by showing ads. And so, consequently, that's where people are going to make their money. Look, you people, and by you people I mean everybody on the internet, is cheap. They want free.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet used to be entirely free.
Yeah.
And we got used to that. I get it. It's a lot easier to say we're giving you a discount than we are now starting to charge. So it's a thing, and I get that. But we don't want to see ads. We don't want to pay for things. Stuff like Substack and those things where people pay a subscription are there, but they're not tremendously successful. Very few people are making a living at it. Google, if you are a YouTuber with over 1 million followers, you can make some money. 2 million, you can make some money. But that's because Google shows ads and then gives you a piece of the revenue. but for what every ad that gets seen. So it's still ad-based.
And what we're hearing is a smaller and smaller chunk.
Every year.
So most YouTubers will take third-party ads that they read themselves instead of the Google ad that's stuck in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, that's horrible.
Those are annoying, yeah. And that's also why we're starting to see more and more companies ask for a login. That you want to get information, you have to log in, so they can have a direct relationship with you rather than needing to go through advertisers too.
Right. I have a throwaway Gmail address who subscribed to so many things.
Yep.
So many things. And, you know, it's the only thing I use it for, so I never go and... Well, every once in a while I'll go and see what they're offering me, and it's never anything useful. But, and that's why a lot of places have subscriptions now, Patreon, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And those are... Some people are making money at that. If you've got, millions of subscribers, the 5%, and it is... we see this on this station. Essentially, 5% of our listeners contribute to this station. And, you know, we're in the middle of a pledge drive right now, a year-end emergency pledge drive, where we still need money. We're in the red, folks, and we've got just a few days to get into the black, and we ain't there. But it's the same with us. 5% of the people who listen to this show contribute. 5% of you. Now, I get it. These are parlous economic times, as my daughter constantly says, in this economy. But the reality is there's got to be more than 5% of you who've got an extra buck lying around. There's got to be more than 5% of you. So please head on over to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and make a pledge. No amount too small, and trust me, no amount too large. We will take whatever you got in order to keep this show and this station on the air. But that goes back to the problem we're talking about. 5% of people pay for their content, whether that's over the radio waves like us or on a website like with subscriptions, except for those places that you can't get there without a subscription. Right. So if you go to, the Washington Times or the L.A. Times or whatever, you want to read an article there, you have to be a subscriber. Okay, those people get a higher percentage than 5. But for any place that gives you the option of please give us money, 5%. Patreons for YouTube viewers, 5%. So it's all, and yeah, I get it. You watch 30 different people on YouTube every day. So if you were to pay for all of them, that would be a lot. Pick one. Pick two. Just, you know, one of them should be us. but that's the problem that we all have.
And especially us, because we can save you money.
Right.
We can answer the question instead of taking your computer to the shop.
Right. If you took your computer to a shop for any question you would ask us today, they would charge you a minimum of $75. Right. We can answer the question instead of taking. Why not contribute $35 to the station? Save yourself $40. This is a bargain you cannot get anywhere else. Over 50% off. Ladies and gentlemen, limited time only. Get there today. But yeah, the reality on the internet is that people don't want to pay, and like I said, I get it in this economy. I get it. Yeah. I absolutely get it. But gas today, I went by a station. Gas was still over $4 a gallon. I get it. But the reality is that the people at the other end also are paying $4 a gallon. So. They need your money too. Everything is more expensive. Everything is costing more. It costs more to buy the equipment to get on the internet, to stay on the internet, for all those influencers, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if you can, think about the poor influencers. Who's thinking about them anymore? Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, sound bites. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And 36 minutes after the at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Yeah.
And just a reminder, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
Does it say who that bumper music was? I'm thinking Kool & the Gang.
Could be.
I believe you are correct.
With the big instrumental section, all the horns, yep.
All right, and now Google and Apple news. Android 17 has been in testing since early this year with the final beta hitting devices just a couple of weeks ago. Insofar as a mature operating system like Android still has big days, this is one of them. The official Android 17 build is starting to roll out on Pixel phones, adding a small set of new features and laying the groundwork for the future. This release also coincides with a Pixel drop and a new version of Wear OS based on Android 17 on Pixel watches. It's slowly rolling out, so have patience. On the Apple side, 5 Apple Watch models will miss out on Watch OS 27 and the new Siri AI features that come with it. The Apple Watch Series 6, 7, 8, SE 2, and the original Apple Watch Ultra will not receive Watch OS 27 and will only get basic security updates going forward. With the update, Apple is effectively dropping 3 years' worth of device support in a single software update, which is unprecedented for the product line. Apple says they're just underpowered for Siri AI and other updates. Google's Wear OS 7, now, Apple has never been afraid to just tell people, yeah, you're done.
Well, and the first generation Apple Watch with the $10,000 gold face has been gone since like a year later.
Yeah, right.
feel sorry for those people.
Well, they've still got a $10,000 piece of gold, so.
which is cheap for a watch.
Yeah, right.
In that end.
Right at that end. Google's Wear OS 7 update adds a new live updates feature that tracks live events from your Android smartwatch. Live updates will now sync with Wear OS devices, so updates like sports scores or an ongoing meal delivery will show up on both your watch and your phone. Google also claims Wear OS 7 offers up to 10% more battery life than Wear OS 6. I don't know where they're going to get it. My watch already lasts 3 days.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Wear OS 7 will also introduce some new Gemini intelligence features, but Google says these aren't launching until later this year. In Mac OS 26.4, Apple introduced new pop-up warnings when you try to paste a command into Terminal. It's designed to stop scammers from stealing from you. This alert appears if you don't regularly use Terminal and you copy the command from somewhere like a website, chat agent, or messaging or email app. If the system detects known malware, you won't even get an option to paste it anyway.
And this is a new scam technique that bad guys are using.
Right. Copy this, paste it into the terminal, tell me what you see. The transition to Gemini on Android OS has been a bit rough for a number of reasons, but a current bug has left some users unable to make calls due to a strange error, and it's not just an issue behind the wheel, which it usually is. Google says this issue has now been fixed. Users still affected can check for app updates via the Google Play Store. iOS 27's new Siri AI is a huge upgrade from the old Siri, but it also took longer than expected to arrive. According to Mike Rockwell, who took on leadership from Siri just last year, Mike Rockwell, the guy whose name you never heard in WWDC this year, by the way, they just tore Siri to the ground and built it back up from scratch. On Friday, Google announced it was making a relatively unknown feature of Google Earth available to a wider audience. The desktop version of Google Earth has had a hidden flight simulator mode since 2007, but it's now easily accessible through a web browser without having to download or install any apps. Just click on the Explore Earth button found near the top right corner of the page. We'll go you one better. We're available right here by phone, so just give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
That doesn't bode very well, because Mike Rockwell was the guy in charge of Vision Pro.
And, right.
And we know how well that's worked out.
Well, exactly.
Amazing technology and too bloody expensive.
Too bloody expensive. So we'll see what happens next. Okay, to the phones. Our first caller. Who's this? Go ahead. Bring him up. Who's this? Hello?
Are we there? We're trying to get all the buttons working. This is Michael's first time putting a phone call into the system.
We'll give him a, Dave had problems last week, and Michael's having problems this week. Please, if you're on the line, please hang on. Give us a moment, and Michael will see.
He's trying to use Dave's cheat sheet.
Dave has a cheat sheet, which Dave apparently eventually understood.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that Michael will understand what Dave has on that sheet. So we're giving it a try. We'll see what happens. If we can't get through to you, try smoke signals. That might work. We'll see if we can get that to happen. Yeah, that didn't work. Okay. In the meantime, let's talk about a little bit about these things. I have a Pixel phone, which usually gets the updates first. There was no update as of yesterday afternoon. Like I said, they roll this out slowly for several reasons. One is so that they can check and see what's going on. And secondly, so that they don't slam their own servers so hard that yep. they crash. So if you haven't got the update yet, like I don't get too excited. It's rolling out. And that's true of every update for every operating system. Apple does it. Linux does it. Microsoft does it. And it works for watches and phones and tablets and desktops and everything. So be aware that that's a thing that's going to happen. Apple has dropped support for a whole bunch of older watches, and they say it's because of Siri. So I guess they're blaming Mike Rockwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throwing him under the bus.
Well, Apple is positioning Siri as a local thing. Right. So it's on device, because everyone's afraid about Siri and AI and on the internet. So they want it to run on your device, which needs a higher-end processor. Or it will offload to Google's private servers. No, I'm sorry. Whew. Apple's private servers.
You got my disease now.
Yeah. The concern has become that Apple is now using Google's foundational models that Google built Gemini with to build the next version of Siri. So how much data is Google going to get out of this deal?
People say the same thing. If you run local LLMs, like use Llama or one of those programs to run AI on your own set of systems,
mm-hmm.
one of the models you can download is the Google Foundational Model, Gemma.
Mm-hmm.
And people are asking how much of that information goes back to Google. The answer is they say none.
Yeah.
that's the answer. They say none. But, you know, how much
somebody will vet
trust
that
them?
Soon.
Right, right. And people are testing it. People are, you know, sniffing their own networks using any one of a dozen network tools, Wireshark or, you know, one of those tools to do that with. And so far they haven't come up with a smoking gun of any sort, but that doesn't mean it isn't out there. And people are reasonably... understandably cautious. Let's
yep.
just say cautious. So that's a thing that we have to worry about. You know, when I run, I run an LLM on my own, my old desktop. So it's quite slow. I'm getting like 5 tokens a second as opposed to, you know, teraflop of tokens a second, which you can get, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, a million tokens a second, whatever it is. From online, but I'm getting 5 tokens, 5.5 tokens a second on average, and I don't care. That's, you know, it's my local stuff, and I get that. But how much of those data are going out to whoever? I don't know. You know, we talk about using Duck AI. They say that their stuff is nobody gets it. Well, how true is that? Nobody knows. All you can do is trust who you need to trust. That's just the way that goes. So, you know, we give our data every day to everybody. Do you trust Google? Do you trust Apple? Do you trust Microsoft? Do you trust your Linux system? You know, you do your due diligence. I trust my Linux system. I'll just stop there. I trust my Linux system. But I still use Google Chrome. I still have an Android phone. So, you know, what are you going to do? I thought you'd be particularly excited about the last announcement about the Google Flight Simulator on Google Earth.
Yep.
You don't need the app anymore. You can do it right in the browser. I don't know how fast or good it is. There's a reason I don't fly even flight simulators.
They had one on Mars, too, so you could fly around Mars.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I really like that whole pop-up warning thing when you paste something into the terminal in Apple. The point behind that is there have been a lot of scams now where somebody will say, okay, take, you know, you either get an email or on a website or somebody calls you up and says, go to this website. See that command there? Copy that, paste it into the terminal, and run it, and tell me what you see.
And then they say, oh, that means someone's hacking you. Which is technically correct.
The best
they
time
are,
correct.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But it usually then downloads malicious software into your computer.
Right.
So and they can steal your passwords, credit card data, banking data.
Right. Often it starts with curl or some, you know, or wget or one of those commands that will download something from the internet. So, you know, that and most people don't know what those are and don't know how they work. And so they are very happy to let someone else tell them what to do. People do that to us all the time. What do I type in? Oh, okay. Honestly, I will tell you, and you're going to have to trust me. So, and, you know, look at this face. Tell me this face isn't trustworthy. But, you know, when it's somebody you've never met before, never seen or never heard of before, that's a problem. The Wear OS 7 update for live updates on things, just in time for FIFA, just in time for that. So you can now just look at your watch and see, you know, get a notice when there's when your team scores a goal. So that's kind of nice, and I do like that. I have Android Auto in my car now. I didn't. I just got a used hybrid, and it has Android Auto in it. I think the guy who sold me the car was more excited than I was. We got in the car, and I was looking at it, and I was poking at the buttons, and he went, "Oh my God, Android Auto! You've got Android Auto! You're gonna love it! It's great! You're gonna love it!" Okay, remain calm. I'm just happy I've got a car that runs. Let's put things in perspective. This car has brakes and shocks, and the hood opens, and the rearview mirror is attached to the car, and the brake lines are in. So, you know, let's start from the basics. But yeah, I do use Android Auto quite regularly. I do like the hands-free calling, and I love the turn-by-turn direction business. Holy moly, that's great stuff. That's great stuff. I admit I have no sense of direction. I get lost in my own driveway. So having the turn-by-turn directions available has been a boon for me. I now, you know, my wife can get in the car and say, oh, go this way, go this way, go this way, anywhere, and we get there. Now I know how she feels all the time.
We may have somebody on the phone.
We do? We might? Okay, let's try it. Hi, who's this?
This is Matt from Rochester.
Hi there. How are you,
all
Matt?
Right. Hi, good.
I am good.
Thank you for your patience, by the way.
That's all right. I wanted to let you know that I did some work on what you helped me out in the last couple of weeks, and I want to let you know how it's all turning out.
Okay, this is where you're installing something from USB, right?
Yes. Well, before that, you folks have been talking quite a bit about AI and about chips and that sort of thing.
Right.
Intel has no problem. They're putting out chips like they're going out of style. But if you're thinking about AMD, that's who they're really chewing up the chips with.
Yep.
Now, having said that, do you know of a company that sells computers and they're willing to put Linux on for you?
A couple of them. System 76 does that. Dell will do it. Actually, you can buy a Dell computer with Linux installed.
Oh, okay. That's
you have to search for it. It's not. You know, they're not putting it front and center on their website so much, but it's there, and you can do that. I've done that.
You can buy a Pangolin from System 76.
Yeah.
And a Thelio. I don't know what a Thelio is.
I think that's a good idea for your listeners to know about. And I'll tell you why. I did finally get Linux installed on my machine. It took an hour and a half with a person who's pretty darn knowledgeable about Windows to go through Windows 11 and try and install this thing. And part of what happened was every time you try to get in enough, you can't just go to the BIOS and start off that way. It doesn't work. The other problem you're dealing with is Windows likes to do, if you'll pardon the expression, from Fortran, you're doing a do loop.
Yep.
And it keeps wanting to go back to itself, no matter what.
Yep.
And you have to find a way to kill that in order to be able to bring in your Etcher, and Etcher works very well with the USB. So
right.
That was very good. But getting rid of that Windows is a real problem.
Yeah. A lot of people, when you get Windows, many systems have BitLocker installed. And you have to un-BitLocker your system before you can install another operating system. So that's a problem as well. And the BitLocker uninstaller, I bought when I bought my new desktop last year, before I knew that the memory prices were going up, so I bought last year. And so I had a 1 terabyte drive, SSD drive. And I thought, well, this will be quick. It took 3 days. And it turns out it was stalled at 99.9%. I just eventually rebooted, and it came back and said, oh, it's gone. You're good. Okay. Okay, thanks. But BitLocker is a problem, and that's just problem one. You're right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's too bad so many people are stuck in this do loop stuff with Windows.
Yeah, yeah. Windows has a real issue. They want to be Microsoft doesn't want you changing your operating system. They don't make money when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Even just plain trying to register to get into the system doesn't work very, very well at all.
Right, right.
Yep.
One of the problems that you're going to have is that Microsoft is reluctant to give you your BitLocker key, which you need to remove BitLocker.
You can find it in your Microsoft account if you have a Microsoft account when you set up Windows, which now they're really, really forcing you to do.
Right.
And I can kind of understand that because they tell you that Apple did the same thing with their iCloud recovery key, our File Vault recovery key. You have a key, you print it out, and you lose that paper. And when you need it,
you get the key.
Yeah, you need it 2 years later to unlock something, and you can't find where you left it.
Right.
So by saving it in an online account, it will stay there. And if you forget your password, then you got to reset the password command and all that mess.
Right. All of you Windows people out there, you have a BitLocker recovery key, and you should have a copy of that somewhere where you can actually lay hands on it when you need it. You can order laptops from places like, or desktops from places like Dell. And one of the things you can do is when you buy one, you can hit the configure button. Right, so you can buy a laptop, but you can then say, oh, I want to configure this. Maybe I want to put more RAM in or a different hard drive or whatever. One of the choices under configuration is you can have it loaded with Ubuntu.
I put a link to the Dell Ubuntu search as well as the System 76 search.
Excellent.
I see. Can you normally get into the configuration before you've really got yourself tangled up too far into Windows 11?
Well, I'm talking about the configuration when you buy it online. At Dell. You go into the, when you go to buy a laptop at Dell. You go and buy it, and one of the things is configure. So you hit configure, and you can change the amount of RAM and the hard drive you get and a few other things. And one of the things you can change is which operating system you want.
I see. Okay, well, I thought you folks want to know how it all turned out.
I'm glad you got it done.
Hopefully some of your listeners know about the other two possibilities, System 76 and Dell.
Yep.
And hopefully things will work out better.
Perfect. Thanks, Matt.
Take care.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye. Yeah.
It used to be that Linux was the tinkering OS.
Yeah.
And so tinkering to install it is the first step.
It's step one. I've been, like I said before, I've been playing with Ventoy, which makes it fairly easy. Once you create the Ventoy drive, disk, the thumb drive, you can just load the ISOs onto it like you would any, you know, just move it over from one to another.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's...
Looks like Lenovo also has Linux pre-installed.
Oh, yeah. Computers. Sorry, did I not mention Lenovo? I like Lenovo. In fact, okay.
You have a Lenovo.
I have a Lenovo, as a matter of fact. That's my desktop, a ThinkCenter. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
I am peachy also. You were speaking about security in the browsers and, you know, information going out.
Yep.
Very surprised that I saw a YouTuber run a program to monitor Brave. And Brave isn't as, say, quote-unquote, secure as we think it is.
Yeah, right. They got caught.
A ton of information.
Yep, I have seen that, and I agree. The problem, well, there's, you know,
Some of it is the browser headers that are required by the W3C.
Right.
That your browser has to send.
Right.
And so that information can give away a lot about your computer just by itself. But yeah, Brave has been caught a couple of times doing more than they're supposed to. And I think one of the answers was, well, these are approved advertisers, so they're allowed to get through.
Yeah.
But that's not what they told us.
Right. It's exactly right. You're exactly right. The problem is there are only a couple of browsers. There's the Chromium browser, which is Chrome, Brave, Vivaldi, Edge, Duck, and then there's Firefox, which is a separate browser. And then there's Safari, which is a separate browser. So, you know, it's a real issue. And if you're going to use the Chromium base, that didn't work. Okay, we're a little behind. All right, I hate to say this, but we got to go.
Okay, and Michael's doing a great job.
Michael is doing a great job. God bless him, every second of him. All right, we're going to... Thanks. That music tells us the first hour is done, but do not go too far. There's a whole other hour of sound bites coming your way. A whole other hour of Steve Ray, a whole other hour of Michael Oden, a whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole other hour of you, assuming you can get through it. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Take a little bio break. Take a little relaxing for yourself. But come on back, because there's a whole lot more sound bites coming your way. What a perfect time to go online and pledge at jazz901.org.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We've got Van from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Van?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I've got a Chromebook that has Linux on it. It was installed. I just don't know what to do with it or how to get, like, Linux Mint or one of the other ones on there. Is there some place around that we can locally that can help me set that up?
So it's already got a version of Linux on it?
Yes.
And do you know what version that is?
I don't. It's just basic. It looks like a command panel comes up.
Oh, just you're at a command line. That's great.
There's the RIT Linux users group, and they do something at Makerspace too.
Steve's okay. Looking that up. We don't have a users groups have kind of gotten less over the years. Steve is keeping the Mac group alive.
Yeah. Because so much information can be had on the internet.
Right.
We're not getting many new members, and some of our older members are passing away.
Yeah. And so for people like yourself who really need some hands-on help, there hasn't been much lately. And I've toyed with the idea of having like a Linux weekend somewhere. I just don't know where yet. Where people can bring their problems. The problem is you need a bunch of people because no Linux, you know, for somebody like you, you need a new version of Linux installed. That's not a 30-second fix, right? So if there's only one person there, other people are standing around in line for 15 minutes waiting. So we need more people at the front end to help more people at the back end. So that needs organization and all of that stuff. And right now, I don't have a lot of time for that. But you're right. We do need some of that.
Rochester Makerspace does have some classes. But it's all like after you got Linux set up. It's, you know, doing 3D printing, doing business, CNC guiding. But you can probably go there and find someone to chat with.
Somebody from Makerspace should probably get in touch with me.
Yeah, I'm sure they're listening, too.
I'm sure they are.
Yep.
And so somebody from Makerspace should probably get in touch with me. I don't have any time.
Post a link to it. Because pretty much all of the Maker tools start with a Linux computer or a Raspberry Pi running, you know, a Pi version of Linux.
Right. But you're right, Van. We need something like that. And I'm going to at least look into it. I don't have an answer for you right now. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Van. I did put Linux on. Linux will run on some Chromebooks. Not all, by any means. But they're Mr. Chromebox dot something has a list of the Chromebooks you can set up Linux on, and I happened to be given one by somebody to pass on to other people, and I put Linux on it. It had 4 gig of RAM, and it had a 64 gig SSD card, so it was able to run in the right processor and all the yada yada, and so it was able to do that, and it was doable, but boy, sometimes it's hard to get that sort of thing working. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Will from Hampton, Virginia. What's up in Hampton these days, Will?
Not too much, just the sale of 250 on the Elizabeth River in Norfolk.
Are you sailing?
No, I'm not sailing. I'm sitting in my air-conditioned apartment, Nick.
Hey, good for you.
Yeah, I'm not getting out of that heat and humidity.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've been listening to the previous callers, and if there's any downside to being in a dual boot situation is that you get kind of lazy about Windows. And so I was dovetailing on that, the conversation before the last, and, inquired into Gemini about, getting that BitLocker key. And it says, Pretz, if you can boot up to Windows, you press the Windows key, type BitLocker, select Manage BitLocker, look for your main OS drive, usually C, and click back up your recovery key. Choose how you want to save it. So it seems like, if you still have Windows and you can get into it, that that's a means of getting that information.
Right. And we tell people all the time, get your information, get your serial number, get your BitLocker key. Those are important pieces of information to have both available and handy.
Before your computer dies.
Get it today. And if you want, BitLocker to me is mostly useless. I don't see a need for it on the average person's computer.
Yeah, and the risk is just too high of something going wrong and you losing all your data.
Exactly.
So things like BitLocker on Windows and File Vault on the Mac, at least on the Apple, when you're setting up an Apple, it asks if you want to turn it on, but it's on by default.
Well.
Microsoft turns it on by default.
Right.
I don't think it even asks. So it encrypts your data so no one can get your data without the password. Not even you.
Right.
And if something goes wrong, no one can get your data, especially
right.
you.
Especially you. And
God
the idea
forbid.
Is...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Will.
I said, God forbid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The basic idea is, if you have sensitive information on your hard drive, and most of us do, if somebody steals your laptop, they can't get at it without your password. Well, first, that assumes you've got a good password. Most people don't. But secondly, how often is a laptop hard drive stolen compared to how often you need to repair your laptop?
Mm-hmm. How often do you leave it unattended?
Right.
So the typical example is you're at the coffee shop and you go up to get a refill.
Right.
And in that 30 seconds, someone could walk in, pick up your computer, and walk out.
But in that scenario, your BitLocker is already unlocked.
Because you were using your computer.
Remember, the minute you log in, BitLocker unlocks your drive.
So you'd have to
log... And it stays unlocked the whole time it's on.
Until you log out. And so how many people log out when they get up and walk away?
Right.
I have been to large corporations where they have signs everywhere, log out when you leave your desk.
Right.
And if you're going to be gone for more than, like 15 minutes... Put your laptop in the desk and lock the desk.
And yes.
And they have roving security protocols that make sure you do that.
Right. And, the clean desk protocol or whatever
yeah.
it is. And I get it, particularly in an academic situation. You're living in a dorm. Your laptop is out on your desk. Somebody walks by and it's a crime of convenience of the moment. And they just walk in and grab it and walk out. I get that. But for
that's
everybody else, no.
Yeah, that's what makes my situation so ironic, because I've done distance learning the entire time that I was getting my associate's degree. I've never really had a need to take my laptop anywhere. And I've never really had a need to use Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It used to be a big deal. You take your computer to class to type your notes.
Right.
But a lot of professors don't like to hear that typey, typey, typey all the time.
And a lot of people now take a Chromebook
mm-hmm.
with them, if they take anything with a keyboard.
Yeah.
They might take an iPad or they might take their phone. But if you take something with a keyboard, which frankly is still much, much easier to type
yeah.
on, you take a Chromebook. You buy a couple of $100 Chromebook. all you're doing is taking notes on it. Everything else lives in your big desktop at home. Why do you need BitLock?
You take your phone and record the class.
Right.
And then transcription gives you all your notes.
Right.
Yeah, going forward, I'm thinking about getting not only a Samsung tablet, but probably a Chromebook as well.
Yeah, if you're going out, look, I've written a couple of books on a Chromebook, and I do that. You know, I'll do the classic: take it to a coffee shop or somewhere and sit in a corner and suck down coffee and write a book. And I do that on a Chromebook because if I lose that or damage it or whatever. First, all of my data are in the cloud, so I didn't lose any of my book. And secondly, if somebody steals my laptop, they've stolen $120 in my case. It's not a $3,000 laptop. You know, I'm not in a position where I can afford to just throw away $120, mm-hmm. but I'm also not in a position where $120 kills me.
Exactly.
So, yeah, BitLocker in general, the first thing, I talked earlier about my Fujitsu stylist. The first thing I did was remove BitLocker. Who needs it? But, yeah, no, I get it. So, yeah, and you're right about dual booting. A lot of people still dual boot because it's belt and suspenders. You've got that second. You can still go back to Windows if you need to. Which is why we often recommend if you've got an old laptop sitting around, you put Linux on that one so you can play with it without losing any of your productivity on your current machine. But
the fact is that I've had most of my personal data on the Linux partition. I don't think I have anything on the Windows partition.
Yeah, and yet you keep it around for who knows why, right? I mean, you just keep it around. I get it.
Yeah.
I don't. Every time I get a laptop in, as I've said this so many times, I get laptops from people. I refurbish them and I give them to people who need them. Every time I get one in, I've got a Windows machine in my hands. But that's the only time I've had a Windows machine up until, or if I bought, you know, when I bought my computer, it was a Windows machine for all of a day. But, you know, except for this Fujitsu, I haven't had a Windows machine in my hands in 30 years. And I haven't missed a thing in 30 years.
I haven't gotten to that mark yet, but I'm getting close.
You're getting there. You know, write it down the last time you actually used Windows. I mean, used Windows as opposed to just went and looked to see if it was still running or to update it and then walk away again. Write down the last time you actually used Linux and see how long it is.
I think I know the answer to those questions.
All right, well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Have fun.
Yeah, we had a computer come in with a customer recently, close to 30 years old, and he doesn't want to upgrade because he knows how to use his program. That program still exists 30 years later.
Yeah, that's important.
He would just have to learn the new version. He doesn't want to do that. So we're trying to find parts to keep a 30-year-old computer working. The battery is the one critical part because they keep swelling. And so we're going through our stash of old computers, and we've already recycled most of them that old.
Yeah.
But, and we've seen that over the years. A new version of the program comes out. People don't want to get the new version because they know the old version. Or they get the new version, leave the old version on the computer intending to use the new version, but never get around to it because they know the old version so well.
Right.
So a lot of times we'll say, delete the old version, get the new version. You'll get the hang of it. It might take a couple of weeks. But if you keep the old version around, you're never going to learn the new version.
I sold an Osborne 1, that's how long ago this was, to a woman who wrote romance novels. Very well-known author. She used it for about 3 months, came back, and immediately bought two more Osbornes.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what are you going to do with them? She said, I'm going to put them in a closet. When this Osborne died, I know how to use WordStar now.
Yep.
I love it. It does everything I need it to do. I'm never going to want to learn another. She said, I'm 70 years old now. I'm never going to learn another program. I'll put those two in a closet. When this one dies, I take out the next one. When that one dies, I take out the next one. By then, I'm going to be 95 years old, and I won't care anymore.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. And she did, right up to the day she died. She was using WordStar on an Osborne 1. And I understand that. Her job was to sit around all day and write.
Yep.
She didn't want to spend time not sitting around all day writing. So once she learned WordStar, she was done. She knew she had to get off that typewriter.
WordStar 7 was last updated in December of 92.
Yep.
And it runs under DOS, not even Windows.
It runs under DOS. I wonder if there's a version of... You can get WordStar... You can run editors, text editors, mm-hmm. in command line mode on Linux that use the WordStar keys.
Oh, they re-released it for free in 2024? Interesting. Robert J. Sawyer, noted science fiction author.
Yep. Joe is a text editor. E3 and JUP are all full-screen text editors that use the WordStar key mapping.
Arthur C. Clarke, Anne Rice, George R. R. Martin, everyone uses WordStar.
Everybody used WordStar.
Because it gave you a blank screen, and you typed.
Exactly right. So, now you can also buy distraction-free word processing software.
Yeah.
So we've gone back 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And... So you can do that.
Somebody showed a picture with Microsoft Office turning on all the toolbars, and there was like half an inch of window left actually type in.
Yeah. I know people who use editors that are specifically designed to be distraction free, and all they do is put text on the screen. Done. You put it there. You edit it. You're finished. It doesn't do a lot in the way of formatting. It does some, but it doesn't do a lot of formatting. It doesn't bother with page breaks and all that other hoopla, because that's something you're going to do later. There used to be two programs, Mince and Scribble, and you would write your code, you would write your text in Scribble, and then you would format your text in Mince.
Yeah, because the writer and the layout were
two different things,
and usually two different people.
And two different people. Or even if they were the same person, two different mindsets.
Yeah.
I see so many people sit there and think, and they stop in the middle of writing and think, you know, do I want to change the font? Do I want to do, what do I want to do? Get your ideas down on paper now. Go back and edit it. You're going to go and edit it anyway. If you don't, you shouldn't be writing. But since you're going to go back and edit it anyway, worry about formatting later. Worry about getting your words down now. The distraction, and there are a number of distraction-free editors. There's bunches of them all over the place. You can even put Google Docs into pageless mode, which gives you less distraction, but still not quite no distraction. A lot of writers are turning to text-based editors again because they are so distraction-free. We're seeing that a lot for writers now. The ability to do everything simultaneously is not as good for the creative process.
And the OSs have put in do not disturb mode.
Right.
So you can turn that on so you don't get that email ping or the text message ping every 5 seconds.
I've talked to people who wanted to set up a separate laptop with no connection to their main systems, so they can't even get notices on those things, right? So, yeah, you'll still get, you know, you've got updates or whatever, but you won't get, oh, such and so IM'd you, or here's a news flash. We get so much of that junk nowadays, it's very hard to concentrate anymore. We're all ADHD now. We're all squirrels. You can look up distraction-free.
Squirrel?
Exactly. You can look up distraction-free editors, And you will find there are more and more of them out there, and more regular editors have something they at least call a distraction-free mode, whether it really is or not. Only you can decide. But, you know, we used to have programs that would interrupt us on purpose. There was one called Coffee, and there was another one that would say, you know, when do you want to be interrupted so you can stand up and walk around? That's valuable, and I do that.
There's a little program called Caffeine that will keep your computer awake.
Right.
So it won't go to sleep while you're doing something.
Right.
Or you could just set your sleep to never.
Or you just set your sleep.
But then you forget, and then when you want to sleep.
Well, Caffeine will also let you say when something is full screen, don't.
Yeah.
So if you're watching a YouTube video or a movie,
yep.
Caffeine will keep the screen alive. But the basic idea is that we have too many distractions now. And if your job is writing, you want to be... That's why, you know, classically, the great, you know, noir writers of the 40s would go rent a hotel room to write their novel in because nothing disturbed them. They didn't have phones. Nobody knew where they were. They'd go there with a couple of reams of paper and typewriter and knock out a novel. And now we sit in our homes with televisions and phones and IM messages and news briefs and everything else, and are shocked when our productivity goes down. Well, duh. So yeah, there's a lot of that, going around. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. And head on over to jazz901.org and make a donation, will you? We need your money. See you in a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
I almost said I'm Dave Enright.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, at least some of us are sound bites. And I think we have nobody on the phone, so you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free at 800-790-0415. Security news. The clock is ticking for Windows and Linux users to update cryptographic keys that protect their systems against firmware-based UEFI infections, a pernicious form of malware that loads before the operating system and anti-malware protections start. Beginning June 24th, three certificates that cryptographically verify that each piece of firmware and software that loads during system boot will expire. Those of you who stay current with your updates are fine. The rest of you should start worrying pretty hard. And I didn't include Macs in those because those are all updated. I don't know anybody who doesn't update.
Yeah, they did that a few days ago.
A few weeks ago.
But make sure you upgrade that last point one, or your stuff will quit working.
That's exactly right. Kodak, there's a word you haven't heard in a long time, has confirmed that it's working with an external cybersecurity expert to investigate a security breach after hackers gained access to some of the company's data. The company spokesrobot said that attackers only accessed a limited amount of data in the incident, but didn't say whether they breached Kodak's internal network. While the company has yet to attribute this breach, the Shiny Hunters Extortion Group has claimed responsibility on their dark web leak site.
Yeah, I got a letter, an email from Shiny Hunters saying they broke into my Spectrum account.
No kidding.
That I gave up years ago, but...
Welcome to it, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm there.
Then they say, you know, give us Bitcoin or
yep.
Whatever. Yeah, okay. Threat actors are abusing Steam Workshop, Valve's community hub for downloading game-related content, to push various malware hidden in wallpaper packages. Wallpaper packages. You heard that right. Wallpaper. Infected wallpapers can lead to hijacking Steam accounts, compromising the system with a backdoor, or running crypto mining processes. Steam wallpapers are apparently executable Windows applications that include games, desktop widgets, and system monitoring tools. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has ordered federal agencies to patch a maximum severity flaw in the Widget Factory Joomla Content Center, or JCE, plugin that is being actively exploited in the wild. Joomla is basically WordPress's big sister, and you know how I feel about WordPress. Oh, and something I couldn't fit in about Microsoft, a critical vulnerability chain dubbed Search Leak in Microsoft 365 Copilot Enterprise could allow attackers to steal sensitive data from a target's mailbox, OneDrive, or SharePoint account through a specially crafted URL. Microsoft says they fixed it, so make sure you're up to date. And let's not leave out Apple. Apple has updated its Beats Studio Buds wireless earbuds to patch a high-severity vulnerability that could be exploited by nearby hackers to eavesdrop on users. Wow. The vulnerability allowed improper authentication in the firmware running on the Bluetooth-related chips, enabling people within signal range to impersonate devices that had currently been paired with the earbuds. The researchers demonstrated this in a series of end-to-end attacks that allowed them to eavesdrop on conversations or sounds within earshot of the phone microphone. Of course, when you call us, we're broadcasting the entire conversation. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Meanwhile, we will go to Jerry in Jacksonville, Florida. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, guys. Hey, just in time for the summer solstice. I am looking for a 24-hour analog clock screen saver. My model for what I'm sort of looking for is actually a web page. Take a look at naturalclock.net, and it shows you a two-handed clock that is the hour and the second and the various twilights, and it shows you how much daylight you have and stuff like that.
Something like timeanddate.com can do that, too.
In a 24-hour clock format, analog.
Are you on Windows?
I can be either Windows or Mac.
What is it?
Windows or Mac. Yeah, he's looking for a 24-hour clock that goes from, you know, 0 to 23.
Right.
24-hour time.info lists a whole bunch of them.
But he wants a screensaver.
Yeah, I found a bunch online, but all of them are very old and don't run on more modern Macs or Windows.
Yeah, the ones you found are old.
Yeah, there's one called, I don't know how to pronounce this, Fliklo, F-L-I-Q-L-O. There's a Windows and a Mac version. It's basically one of those flip like the old time flip clocks.
Yep. Does it go 24 hours or does it?
Yeah, you can set it for 24 hours.
Yeah.
But it's digital.
Yeah, it's digital. Isn't that what you wanted?
Analog.
Analog.
A clock face, not numbers.
Oh, analog. I beg your pardon. I did not realize it was you wanted analog.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm being fussy.
That's my mistake. Okay. Wow.
Screensaver Planet says they have 35 analog screensavers available.
All right, I will get some of these and let you guys continue to poke at. Thank you.
Yeah, Steve will put up a link to that in just a moment. Screensavers Planet, the analog DIN clock is probably the one most people are looking at. I can see where, you know, if you want a clock on your screen that your kids can't read, analog is the way to go. Yep.
What was the joke I read? So we're gonna make a clock, so it has 24 hours on it.
Yeah.
Like the Earth? No, 12 hours. Okay, so when's it going to start? Middle of the night. What?
Yeah. And we're going to divide it into, what, 10 sections? Because that's easy to remember?
No, 12.
12, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, there's a Screensavers Planet will do that for you. So that's kind of nice. Again, when you download something, check it for viruses. Screensaver Planet is a well-known site, but check it for viruses before you install it somewhere. Speaking of security, which we were just talking about, I was amused by this Joomla thing. The problem I have with WordPress, WordPress is an excellent piece of software. There is no question of that. But there are two things wrong with it. One is that most of the pieces and parts are not created by the WordPress people.
Yeah, the plugin.
The plugins are created by anybody.
Which makes it a really rich environment to deal with.
Right. And most people are not diligent about updating. Now, there is a program called WordFence, which helps you keep it updated. But you really need to check daily. Because when you've got 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 plugins, any one of them can change at any time. And every single one of them that changed because there was a vulnerability, and the bad guys know that. And so they write code that just scours the internet looking for WordPress.
Yep.
And hitting it. So be very careful when you're using something like WordPress or Joomla or the one that starts with an M. Son of a gun. The one that education uses.
Moomoo?
Moomoo. I don't remember what it's called. Because I haven't been in education in 15 years. So, Moodle, M-O-O-D-L-E, Moodle. That's the one that is really designed for educational use. There's... And that leads me to reminding you that you are a systems administrator now. You have a computer.
Yep.
You have to administer that system. I did that for 20-plus years as a living, and I know that it is not an easy thing to do, but you have to do it, and you have to do it diligently. So I just talked in my last newsletter about every newsletter. At the bottom of the newsletter said, and this is a great time to back up. I should probably add, and update everything. And by everything, I mean... your router. Is there an update available for your router because it's break-inable?
And most of the time you have to rely on your ISP for that.
Right.
But if you happen to own your own router or the Wi-Fi router, if that's separate from your ISP.
Right. Any router that you own and control. I have a Google Home router and it auto-updates. But I check it regularly. You have a printer that connects to the network. Guess what? It has a web browser in it. Guess what? That's vulnerable. If there's an update to your printer, install it. And that means you log into your printer as the administrator and run the update. All of your computers, all of your laptops, all of your phones, all of your tablets. If you are running the Internet of Things, you probably are vulnerable, depending on whose stuff you're using. But if you're running it through like a Philips hub or whatever, then that hub needs to be updated. There's a lot. The more stuff you have connected to the Internet, the more stuff you have to keep updated on a daily basis. Now, again, is there going to be an update every day? No. Can you realistically get away with updating once a week? Sure. But that also means that the bad guys have 6 days to break into your system. for every day you don't update. And there are some companies that at least used to, I don't know if they still do, they used to have a service where you could say, this is what I have, and they would inform you when there was an update, which is really nice. The problem is getting all that information. It used to be that companies would freely put that out as an RSS feed, or there was an API that let you, you know, get that programmatically. But most of them don't do that anymore. So it's harder and harder to get that information. But you need to keep your systems up to date. And I know what a pain in every area of your body it is to be constantly checking for updates and then having to update something and yada, yada, yada. But it's far less painful than having to reinstall your operating system and losing data because you didn't do it. So, you know, it's a Saturday afternoon. I know it's a beautiful day out, but maybe this afternoon while you're sitting around with your feet up and an adult beverage in your hand, not too many of them, check and see if all of your devices, including your printers, including your smart TV, including your Alaska devices, have updates waiting for them. Make sure that you are up to date on everything, because all of them are ways to get into your network and steal stuff. So be aware and be careful. And that, you know, that includes Macs. I had somebody yesterday. I was told, now, I do not know what city they're in, but they said, I was told by the Apple store that apples can't get viruses. Is this true? No, it is not true. Is it true that it's difficult? Yes. Is it true that it's rare? Yes. Is it true that they can't? No. No, it is not.
Yep.
You should be running some look, there are two reasons to run an antivirus program. And that's even separate from malware in general. You should be running an anti-malware program and all that stuff. But antivirus for two reasons. One, Macs are not immune to viruses. And secondly, you want to be a good net citizen. If you get a program, even if that virus won't attack you, you could pass it on to somebody else. And you don't want to do that. So definitely, you know, fix that. Which leads me to a new topic that I've discovered recently. Atomic desktops.
Ooh.
Which sounds like a 1950s superhero Batcave thing.
Atomics!
Atomics! Atomic batteries to power. Yep. Turbines to speed. Sorry.
Is your seatbelt hooked?
What?
Is your seatbelt hooked?
Is your seatbelt hooked? Holy bat, Guano Batman. Okay, so atomic desktops or immutable desktops. We all understand how the Chromebook works. Chromebooks are immune to viruses because you cannot change the operating system. It is locked. It is immutable. There's a whole sequence of events that has to happen before you can unlock and update the operating system. And that's not easy to do, nor is it doable from the command line. So viruses can't infect. Now, you can still get malware. You can still get socially engineered, right? Click here, go to this space. You've been hacked. Click here. But you cannot get a virus because the desktop is locked. It is immutable. Linux is beginning to say, many Linux vendors are beginning to say, we want this.
Mm-hmm.
So Fedora, in general, Fedora 44, has a series of atomic desktops. There's Silverblue, which is the GNOME desktops. There's Kinuinte, which is the KDE desktop. There's also the Cosmic desktop and the Budgie desktop. So you get a lot of choices now for what desktop you want. But at heart, they are immutable operating systems. You can change your applications. You can change the programs you run, you cannot change the operating system. Now, again, that doesn't mean you can't get malware, that you know, you can't do that stuff, but it cannot take over your operating system. It cannot root your machine and own you. And those are coming online. I just installed Kinuinte, the KDE version of Fedora 44, on a laptop that I was setting up to move to somebody, and I'm so far liking it a lot. KDE, not really my favorite desktop, but a very, very good one. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's just I've been using XFCE for 35 years, so I'm kind of used to it. But KDE has a lot going for it, and it's very pretty. It is very, very pretty. But anyway, that's on that desktop. And I'm thinking, you know what? This is a really good thing to be able to give to somebody else, because it's that much more difficult to screw up.
Mm-hmm.
It's that much more difficult for them to get hacked. Not that they can't, but it takes away a lot of that. So it's the Fedora Atomic Desktops, and if you do a search for that, you can see them all listed, and they can be downloaded and installed on a system like any other laptop. And right now there are, I think, four of them. Like I said, KDE, GNOME, Budgie, and Cosmic, I think, are the four. There might be another one. I should probably just go there and look. Could you put a link?
Yeah. I deleted the library folder because I don't read books, but now my computer won't work.
So, yeah, exactly. Exactly the sort of thing. So, yeah, there's Silver Blue, there's Kinuinte, there's, oh, Sway, I forgot, Sway, I knew there was another one, Budgie and Cosmic. So, depending on what you like, well, I don't like Sway very much myself, but which is why I always forget about it. But it's currently Linux 44, and you have to jump through hoops to go to 45 when that comes out. It is designed to not be easy to upgrade the base operating system. You can upgrade the applications super easy. It'll do that for you, just like any other version of Linux. So, you know, if you're running a LibreOffice, it'll update just like anything else would. If you're running Firefox, it'll update just like it normally would on any other system. But to upgrade from, say, Fedora 44 to Fedora 45 when it comes up, you have to jump through hoops. And that's on purpose, because it is difficult to change the underlying operating system with an atomic desktop. And I'm beginning to find that I really, really like that idea. Canonical, who does Ubuntu and all the hundreds of millions of variations of Ubuntu, has said that they are also looking very closely at atomic desktops. They haven't got any yet. Fedora is really the first mainstream one I know about. That's out there for the general public. But I see atomic desktops are coming along. So people who have wanted the security of a Chromebook, but with a much more powerful operating system with a whole lot more stuff available for it, atomic desktops are here if you're a Fedora user. And honestly, for 99.9% of the people, you don't know what one you're using. You don't care. And for Ubuntu people, they're coming down the pike. So I like the idea of atomic desktops, and I'm, like I said, I'm using it on that laptop before I pass it on to somebody. And so far, it's pretty good.
You often see information kiosks like that.
Yes.
It runs this program, and nothing can change.
Right. Right, because you don't have access to the unless Windows crashes.
Yeah.
Then you see blue screen.
How many ATMs do you see with the screen of death?
Exactly. But this is, you know, this is your own system, and we all make mistakes. We've all deleted something that we shouldn't have at some point or another. Don't pretend you haven't, or don't pretend you couldn't. So having an atomic desktop that actively prevents you from being abysmally stupid is a good thing. So yeah, I'm pretty pleased. The Atomic Desktops for Fedora. If you're looking into Linux, the GNOME desktop is nice. The Fedora, excuse me, yeah, the Kinuinte, the KDE Plasma desktop.
You sure it's not Kinoite? Because it's a mineral.
It might be Kinoite, yeah.
Discovered by a Jesuit priest named Kino. So it's Kinoite.
It's probably Kinoite. The first time I heard it on a YouTube video, which is how I learned about Comet desktops, they pronounced it Kinoite. But I'm sure it's Kinoite. I think you're probably right. And I will now have to try to remember to start using that.
Yeah, it's a silver blue mineral.
There you go. Silver blue is the...
A copper silicate.
Right, Silver Blue is the GNOME version, and Kinoite is the Silver Blue KDE Plasma version. And Sway is not my favorite desktop. Budgie's pretty good. Cosmic, a lot of people like it. It's the Pop OS desktop, but so far of the ones that are out there, I prefer Kinoite. I prefer the KDE. You need a fairly... No, I shouldn't say this. I used to not like KDE because it was very bloated and very slow and took a huge number of resources to run. So it wouldn't run on lower-end hardware very well at all. They have fixed 99% of that. It's still super pretty, has every special effect you could ever want, and is now fast and usable. So Kinoite is probably a good place to start if you're looking at the Fedora Atomic Desktop. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody who tried to call in and got shunted around the universe through our new phone system. I want to thank Michael particularly for taking his day off to come in here and substitute for that doggone lazy Dave Enright, who's off somewhere in the Southwest, one step ahead of the law, and for doing as well as he did with the new phone system with no previous understanding that it was coming along. I want to thank Dave, Steve Retinol. Which one are you?
I don't know anymore.
I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Hopefully you've managed to jump over to jazz901.org and hit that donate now button. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?